observation of today's date, the Ides of March, public service announcement, we ask that you put away all knives and other sharp objects. That's humor. Moving right along, I've been asked by our ethics officer to inform everyone. Now, the rule is that any gift under $25, I think is the level, and I know that Sean has really been hustling the golf course to get a surplus again, but these don't count as vendors' supplies, I hope.
Commissioner, I got to say, my colleagues back here say that I'm working the commissioners, and I said, I've got to do anything I can to get over the fence.
I would endorse that. I'd say, keep them coming. Good morning, everybody. The roll, please.
Dan Moore is absent today. We have Bruce Rinker.
Here.
Debbie Berry.
Yes.
Two members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Please join us in the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And if I may have a motion for approval of our minutes for February 15th.
So moved.
And seconded. All in favor? Financial report.
Thank you, Commissioners. Good morning. We will be brief with this today as we are still in our slower period of the year.
Very slow.
There we go. Okay. Quickly through, we are right on track where we would expect to be with revenues. We're consistent with prior year in terms of across the park district, so there's no need to really highlight much there. We have the same item as we did that will remedy itself in March relative to the timing of our PERS booking. So while it looks like we're higher on salaries and benefits, in fact, we are not. We had it parked in a liability account last year, so we're consistent there as well. And we have a grouping item where if you take the two contractual services and self-funding items last year at this time and you compare those to this year at this time, we are actually comparable. This year, we do have the groupings the way that we would like it. Last year, we had some of our self-funded expense actually moved up into the contractual services piece. So again, we're comparable, but that's why it looks like it's performing differently. It really is not. And this is this will be evidenced in the total when we look at the operating expenditures. Again, our utilities continue to be a little bit higher. We did pre-buy on a bunch of sides. We do have some fuel costs that are up due to the weather and the amount of plowing that we did through January and February. And we are earlier in the year on some of our advertising expense. So utilities and advertising, excuse me, the fungicides and advertising are timing related, and the utilities and fuel are related to weather. So about 40% of that operating expenditure difference is due to the timing items that I just mentioned. And when we look at the timing of our capital projects, with land acquisition and a couple of the large projects that we have going on listed here, that's why we are ahead of pace on our capital expenditure side. When we look at where we were at this point last year. Jumping into golf operations, again, this is a little bit slower start in terms of weather, but it's not a high point of the year, so it doesn't create a wild variance for us. And we do have the ability to anticipate making that up as we get into the busier season. Our operating expenses, this is where you see that earlier purchase of the fungicides versus what we did in 2017. So that's $100,000 of that delta, which otherwise shows we're right on track with our operating expenses versus last year. And I just want to highlight, when you look at the capital equipment, we had cart purchases that happened earlier in the year last year. We're on track to do the same again this year. This will be a timing item, and it will smooth out as we move through the course of the spring. And then this is just by course. There's really not much to talk about here since we're so early in the year. Moving over to zoo, we are still affected a little bit by weather again when we look at the revenue side, but again, we will make that up. Our utilities and costs related to weather did drive up some of our expenses, and this had to do with when we had the power outage and a couple of water main issues that we had to contend with in January and February. We talked about those at the last meeting as well. And then we do have increased capital activity given the timing of those projects, several of which were listed on the prior slides. And SPPY means same period prior year. Our dock revenue, we are fully at capacity in terms of dock rentals. And our pricing is the same, but it looks like we're higher than last year, and that's due to timing of collections. We are much more effective. We have people paying on time this year as opposed to late payments last year. So we're ahead on a timing basis in net doc revenue. That will smooth out as we go into the year as well. And when you see salaries and benefits, the reason why that looks higher is because we are now at full staff because of the timing of the PERS and, of course, our hospitalization and our merit increases. And then when we go down to net, when we consider our capital expenditures, we're actually up over the same period of prior year in terms of our net surplus. And then again, these are enterprise operations by division, and we are not busy enough to spend much time on what's happening here. Nature Shops, same thing, slight variance on the revenue side. And the slower start is not location specific, so that's the only point of showing it on this slide. It's across the board. We do expect to make that up. And then we do break down again our charges for services, so you can see that other category that is baked into our park-wide or district-wide operations. Nothing surprising here. And we will have a reclass coming up where in the miscellaneous category, we need to move some restricted revenues that are related to the Zoo Society and a contract that we have based on attendance. That's why it ended up here. It was contractual, it was based on attendance, but we are gonna move that over to the restricted fund. It's in a restricted fund now. We'll put it specifically on the zoo restricted funds when we report this out next time. And that is it. Any questions on that?
Thank you. Brian?
Very well. Good morning, everyone. We have a robust list of action items, general action items. With us this morning, we have our very first action item is the retirement of Timothy R. Garris, Ranger Sergeant. He actually emailed me at 5 o'clock this morning. He was actually covering one of our shifts. He sends his regards to the board. On behalf of the Board of Park Commissioners, we'd like to recognize his more than 30 years worth of service to Cleveland Metro Parks. The action item falls in the mid portion of page 7, recognizing Tim Garris for his years of service.
So moved.
Seconded. All in favor?
The next action item we have is the 2018 appropriations budget. Before I get into the, just explain the appropriation budget, I'd like to thank Bill and the entire team that put the budget together. As we've also talked about on our conditional operating side, for the coming year, we're going to go into the budget season early, and we're going to work through to bring an annualized budget to the commissioners for the next year instead of this conditional operating budget. We found that it will perform economies of scale and efficiencies instead of having to pull different purchase orders throughout the year. So we will be working on that as part of the tail end of this. The budget book is due to be submitted in the first part of June. And then as the matter of, we had our audit committee meeting this morning. So we're working through all of those. And so action item B is the 2018 appropriations budget. Bill, if you'd just like to highlight the bottom end numbers, and we'll look for the approval.
Yes, thank you, Brian. Bottom end numbers for our grand totals on the expenditure side is our baseline budget is $144,691,455 when we carry over our encumbrances of $9.227,614 million. We end up with a total of $153,919,069 for which we are requesting approval.
Move approval.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
The action item C is Club Metro financial report or financial request. This is something that it's been a nonprofit employees club for a number of years to increase camaraderie and sharing throughout the year. They do an employee picnic. Most recently, a team of folks went to the Cleveland Food Bank and volunteered their time to bag groceries. So this is our charity choice. This is our membership. This is the annual request for the matching funds from the Cleveland Metro Parks in the amount of $6,500. There's over 200 employee members at this point in time, and we continue to try to find ways to reach our employees through different engagements. The recommended action falls on the middle part of page C to authorize the payment to Club Metro for 2018.
Move approval.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the investment policy adoption. I'll turn it over to Bill, and then just highlight a couple of the changes.
We submitted our investment policy for legal review with outside counsel in conjunction with our internal counsel. Minor modifications were made to basically bring the document up to current requirements, one of which is training that's required for any government official that is treasurer or handling funds on behalf of the public. We go through that training and certification annually, and we built that into the policy to require that we do as well. Other changes were not substantive. Included in the agenda were those changes. and we could go through those in detail should you like, but we are requesting approval for the adoption of our updated investment policy.
Recommended action. If there are no questions, follow the little portion of page 10.
Move approval.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
The next we have is the authorization of a land acquisition. This is the Cahoe Vivian Island Ridge property. We're going to have Kyle and the team just kind of work through. And then later in the agenda, we'll be highlighting the 2017 real estate report.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning. This is a really exciting opportunity.
You shaved.
Yes.
Excuse me.
My wife likes the beard, so she gets it from November until...
We're not interested.
Thank you. I'm on property, so... this is a very exciting opportunity. Thanks for trying to get me on my toes. This is a 63-acre purchase in Yucca Creek, which is exciting for a lot of reasons, and I'll go through some of the stats as to why this is really great, is that Yucca Creek Reservation is 473 acres. It's one of our legacy reservations, so it's been along for a really long time. And this would add more than 10% to the size of the reservation. It's actually, we look back through the acquisition history of the reservation, all the way back to our founder, and it is the largest acquisition, with the exception of Lakefront Parks portion of the park. So it'll really expand that green space. And for anyone who's ever gone through Yucca Creek Reservation, it's a very narrow, gullied reservation. So this is high property that kind of dips down into the reservation, so it really provides a lot of community connectors that aren't already there. So it's a very exciting opportunity. Cahoe Vivian is a builder. They acquired this property out of foreclosure a couple of years ago, built the rest of the developable lots. And there was some other platted lots where it was planned but not platted. And they basically decided to just preserve the rest of the property. So we agreed to a purchase price of a little over $542,000 with them. They have agreed to not close until May of 2019. And what that does for us is it gives us a significant amount of time to come up with other funding sources to help acquire the property. Now we're asking the board to authorize the purchase, but then we can go out and try to find funding sources in the next, in the coming year. It's a really exciting purchase. Yucca Creek watershed is only 9% permanently protected green space, so this would really add to that. And we're very excited about the community connections that comes with it.
So we think from the upland down into the existing park here, there'll be a line of communication pathway.
Actually, what's interesting is it's just environmental design-wise. This property has been just green space for a while, so there's already trails through it that connect both South Yucca to the south and then Richmond Heights kind of into the reservation, so this would kind of just formalize that.
Got it.
Now, we haven't gone through the planning process of exactly what it's going to be, but we're excited about what it could be.
Thank you.
I think it's long been thought that it, I mean, it looks like a Metro Parks, you know, because of its proximity to it. And sometimes we have those challenges where there are developable, you know, acreage near or adjacent to our properties that have been sitting for a long period of time. And periodically we have these scenarios come up. And this one has been sitting in various states of flux for quite a number of years. And to be able to pick up 63 acres, we have talked with the mayor. And they are very pleased to see this acreage preserved, and again, adding this amount of acreage to this reservation. And again, the plans are to leave it passive recreation.
And the developer really decided not to fully develop areas that they could still develop in there.
So the story behind it is, you know, Metro Parks has identified this property since 2000 as an acquisition piece. And the original developer, I don't know who they were, but came in and built, I think it was 60
Michael
homes.
Sandra.
Yeah, they built 60 homes. And then the financial crisis, and then went into foreclosure, and that's when Cahoe Vivian came and bought it.
Okay.
And they, basically the way it was kind of described to me was they didn't want a competitor to get it.
Sure.
So they prefer that it be green space and it be an amenity to the community that they've already built. So,
that's great.
You know, we came to a nice meeting time.
That's good.
Excellent.
Recommended action. If there are no further questions, falls in the middle portion of page 11 to enter into the agreement for fee simple of 63.3 acres. It's described in the Cahoe Vivian Highland Ridge LLC.
Move approval.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the authorization of a land donation from the Bramer Farms. This is the Sam Petros, who's the developer of this current subdivision. Kyle's still standing, so he's going to give us just a quick update about the protection of this wonderful part of the East Branch of the Rock River.
Yes, thank you, Brian. I'm not sure if you're going to throw it to me, so I just kept standing. But so this is, it's the portion of Hinckley and Russell Reservation is kind of in between. It's actually in Broadview Heights, right across West Boston Road. which is the line between Hinckley and Broadview Heights. This is an exciting opportunity. Sam Petros bought this property with Raymar Farms. It was a farm, a family farm for many years. And the plat on the property showed 9.3 acres being protected. It's a floodplain, wetlands, and there's a nice kind of environmental divide with the hillside from where the housing development will be to where the property is. So it's a really nice protection opportunity along the east branch of the Rocky River. Rising Valley is just to the south, very high natural resource value. So our team is really excited about this, and it also sets up potential future acquisitions up the east branch of the Rocky River closer to Rexville and Mill Stream Reservations. And it's free.
There are no questions in accordance with the deed restrictions. We are asking for acceptance of the donation of the fee simple 9.3 acres, plus or minus, depending on how it finally flats out, for the Board of Park Commissioners' approval on the middle portion of page 12.
All in favor?
The next is to enter into a grant agreement and grant match funds. This is with NEORSD. Is Jim here? Jim's ready to go on this one. This is his favorite area.
The parking lot right out here is about an acre and a half. Serves the administration office here that we're standing in. Right now, we currently have about 127 parking spots out there with 688 spots. We have the need to expand just a little bit. So we're going to end up with about 20 more parking spots. However, the good news is we're going to add about a half acre of green space. And based on the EPA calculators that we had to perform for the grant opportunity, we currently put about 1.2 million gallons of stormwater into the storm sewer system on Fulton Parkway. And with the addition of the green space and the stormwater control that we're going to do, we're going to reduce that by about a million gallons a year. So it's going to go from 33 inches a year of annual precipitation down to about 6 inches per year.
So. This has been very consistent. This looks similar to what the commissioners have done for the Seneca Park Golf Course. We've also done work on the bottom part of the zoo going into the Big Creek. We've also done work over at North Chagrin as well. So this has been very consistent. We're currently working on the Wolf Picnic area as well. And we've also done work at Wildwood to continue to take the load off of the storm sewers.
That's an impressive ratio, that much capture for that little bit of space.
Yeah. And one thing that we are doing that that I did not point out is we've implemented different stormwater control measures over different projects, and this is a kind of a culmination. So we have vegetated bioswales, which we're very familiar with. We have pervious pavement, a small section, which we're very familiar with. And now we're adding underground storage retention to the north there, which we did implement in Huntington a few years ago and have really good success with it. So it's basically underground retention where we don't lose any parking spots, but we still provide stormwater control.
Why such a small area of the pervious pavement? Is it just grant funding related, or is it?
Not grant funding. You can't really see it. I'll just point over here.
There's a ridge that goes right here, and it sheds this water this way.
Into that corner.
So,
okay.
So we don't have to get into regrading the entire parking lot. We're kind of
just across the grant divide.
We had to put a small implementation up there, and I didn't want to lose the parking spots.
Sure.
So we're able to use a small area of pervious pavement.
And the cost of pervious is 2 or 3 times.
Yeah, we currently see about $9 a square foot, depending on which one we decide to use. We are doing a big effort right now at Wolf Picnic area. It's about 8,000 square feet of pervious pavers. So it is financially a little bit tough compared to normal pavement.
Which
so,
is nine versus per square foot?
Well, it'd be about $11 a square yard, so I don't have a calculator in front of me. But about 2 to 3 times, you're correct. Yeah. About 2 to 3 times. And that does not include all the infrastructure you have to put down beneath the pervious pavers, which is typically about 2 feet of stone. So.
Good. Thank you.
Great. And good project.
Again, I'd like to thank the grants team and the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District. This is part of the Green Infrastructure Grant Program, the GIGI program. The recommended action falls in the middle portion of page 13 to enter into the agreement with the sewer district, as is the above described project.
Just one quick question. Was there a required match for this, or is it just, again, to finish the project that was in development as well?
There was not a required match, but we had a little bit of match in there just based on the project cost. So
okay.
We asked for $250 and they gave us the $245 or so.
Thank you.
Nice. You do it within the footprint. That's really good.
That's great. And that space is good. That's incredible. Move approval.
Second.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
The next is the Euclid Creek Reservation. This is authorization into enter into the grant. This is part of the bigger picture project of the in the Euclid Creek Reservation. This is Euclid Beach, Villangela, the shoreline ODNR. This is a $100,000 grant that we're working with to basically apply to the Euclid Beach Pier through the state capital budget. So it's just recognizing the dollars to bring it in as we're bringing the guaranteed maximum price that was awarded on February 15th of 2018. Recommended action falls into the top portion of page 14.
Seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
The next action item we have is the Asian Lantern Festival Agreement. This is to really help, I would say, highlight the work that we're doing with our new Asian Highlands exhibit that will be home to the snow and Aumur leopards, red pandas, and takins. This is work that our team has been putting on. This is much like we have done dinosaurs, how we've done various other one-off things. It will run for a minimum of 28 nights from the mid-portion of June to the mid-portion of July. We need to enter into the contract to be able to secure all of the event and event planning moving into it. This is a ticketed event and an effort to drive attendance for this, but this will be a relationship between the entity, and it will be a revenue split of 62-38 to Cleveland Metro Parks. Again, this will be in the off hours of the zoo. If there are no questions, the recommended action falls into the portion of page 15 to enter into the agreement with TMU Arts and Culture.
Sorry, second question. This says that May to August. Is that when it's running, or am I reading?
May 1 to August.
You said June.
We're actually looking at formalizing the exact dates. This is part of the contract negotiations. We're working with how they get set up, where they come in, how they come in, and where the dates actually fit, so it gives us the most amount of time.
Okay, thank you.
Seconded. All in favor?
We will move into the tabulation of award and bids. We have the renewal of the sewer and pit toilet cleaning services. We have yes, we're going to cover lots of things today. Mixed grass, hay, and alfalfa. With our new barn, we were able to secure multiple vendors, and we're still in the process of our hay project down in the Cuyahoga Valley National Park. We are actually bringing forward the Seneca Golf Course Improvement Earthwork Phase 3. This is to close out the final phase of the 27-hole redevelopment of the property. Asphalt improvement to the parking lots in Rocky River Millstream Lakefront in the Metro Park Zoo. And then a co-op of one new Ford 750 actual truck. Those are the recommended actions related to all bids.
Move approval.
Seconded. All in favor?
Approval of vouchers and payroll.
Thank you, Brian. Under resolution number 18-03-034, following vouchers have been reviewed as to legality of expenditure and conformity with the Ohio Revised Code. Recommended action is that the Board of Park Commissioners approves this resolution number 18-03-034 as listed above.
Move approval.
Seconded. All in favor? We have our open portion, public comments. We've got a few people sign up. Yes? Go ahead.
My name is Bill Gallagher. I'm on the property next to in Fairview Park, the former NASA property. It's 200,000 square feet on 10 acres that butts up against National Parks. We worked hard today to try to get on the agenda to propose to you guys some coexisting improvements that we want to do next to the property. We worked with Kyle, Sean, and Isaac, and we just couldn't get to today everything that we needed to do to try to overcome some of the logistical differences between the properties and some covenants that need to be addressed. We want to let you know that we are looking forward to being on the agenda next month and try to come up with a proposal that works perfectly with Metro Parks as well as our development. And we just want to let you know that we're here to address the three concerns that were brought up to us, and we're doing everything in our power to try to overcome. So we look forward to trying to work with you guys, and just want to let you know that we're here.
Appreciate the heads up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Marty?
Have you heard low? Over $3,000 for Main Street, plus 7 cleanup costs to attract 30 people to the beach house, staging a less than successful winter event about creating winter events. While hundreds to thousands turn out for winter nature presentations or feed a chickadee, or learn about coyotes at Rocky River Nature Center. A couple of $1,000 for speakers to promote the nature preschool. The budgeted but yet unbuilt dipping dock and repairs to the often submerged boardwalk would benefit both students and visitors. They are far more important to the park than another restaurant rehab. It is evident to many people that your main focus is Lakefront. Add nature programs there to engage city residents with something more relevant than a planning session. Downtown is already full of alcohol and entertainment planners. Less selling or fixing. The Nature Center and other buildings are showing wear and could use some attention. The original reservations, which established your following and poor tax support, are becoming the neglected stepchildren, while shining new lakefront and restaurant focus get all the love and attention. How many people will visit the Emerald Necklace Restaurant compared to the Nature Center? What will be the return on investment for the $1/3 million worth of work there, which increases each meeting? Look at the numbers today from Irwin's Wharf and the Chalet. Get worse, not better. It's not just Tinker's Gorge, which is collapsing. So is Big Creek and Brookside. Repairs were discussed 15 years ago, but not recently. Also Fort Hill, next to the steps. Did the construction trigger more damage? Slippage below River South. Project in Fairview. Metro Parks altered the deed restrictions to suit Brickman and then cleared even more ground-holding trees. His minimal penalty dollars are unspent as the damage to Metro Parks unfolds. No money for basic projects. Looking for a state loan for the Hinkley Dam, also a long-known problem. But windscreens for the beach house with a failed water line. Parties take precedence. Seems like Merlin's Wharf could have been used if it needs to be open this time of year. There's a continual struggle to fill restaurant concession jobs, which, unlike other seasonals, don't offer the park experience or recruit lifelong employees. Just another restaurant job, as reflected in turnover and patrons disappointed with the service. Newness attracts only briefly before it needs another gimmick, like football or timers for the toboggans. Today, you approve the budget for 2018 with the most minimal information I've seen in my years here. A bad example for Sunshine. Even if the agenda listing meets your legal obligation, it is an insult to the taxpayers whose money it is. Message to public officials. These are not your records, you said in a news release. These are public records.
I have to be very candid. The scattergun approach of hitting so many different topics is hard to even respond. I would be happy to sit with Ms. Lesher and debunk many of these things, including the fact that part of the Big Creek isn't even our property. So, when you're lumping things all together, it sounds like a great conversation on the public record, but the facts lead us to the answer, and the work that we're doing and the investment that we're putting into it, the work that we've done presenting this budget, as we have in previous years, laid out the 10-year strategy in various work sessions. We're continuing to carry through that tradition. Work that we're doing as far as rehabilitation has been very steadfast through all of the years that I've been here. So, it's hard to peel back all of the different things that were thrown at us. I would love to have Rose comment on the Sunshine Law and how we hold that in high regard.
Right, and I'm happy to point out that we were not among the 247 agencies that were highlighted in the report from Auditor Yost's office. And when Auditor Yost's office did audit us spontaneously with no notice and looked at our program and our documentation, he applauded our detail and our efforts and our turnaround time. So I'm happy to report that we take that very seriously. And we spend a lot of hours in responding to Ms. Lesher's request, which we are obligated to do, and we do as timely as we can given the volume of requests and the broadness at times. So in fact, we have a couple in the queue right now that has taken one of our top level officers over 10 hours, you know, to work on, and it's almost finished. So we take it very seriously, as seriously as she does, and we're glad that the auditor's office has recognized us for those efforts.
And just a couple things. I understand the hang up about parties, that's sort of a constant, but when you talk about the lakefront only, I mean, the feedback that I sense we've gotten is, first of all, people in Lakewood consistently have praised the accessibility to the lakefront. So it's not just one small location, that's a large community. I think that certainly all along that area in the city of Cleveland, we've heard a lot of very positive feedback. Moving to the east side, we were chastised because we didn't pay as much attention perhaps as we should have. That was a perception with Euclid Beach, Villa Angela, and yet now I see that a lot of the effort there, both in activating the space, improvements that are being made on an annual basis, have also been well received by that neighborhood. Acacia, we got a report recently, a five-year update, and that's a whole area of the east side that never had been served by any metro parks. We learned today there's a section for Euclid Creek, a very substantial increase there. That's not lakefront. It seems that every meeting we have with land acquisition down near Maple Heights is another location with Astorhurst. It goes all around the horn. So the obsession with the lakefront thing, I don't understand that. And as far as the budget, you know, I think, Bill, I'd like to have a comment because we met this morning with our audit people. We take this task very seriously about making sure that the funds are well managed. The budget is something that it's almost an artificial deadline. We have to be able to set essentially an introduction to a budget at this time of the year. And then the heavy lifting goes for the next 3 months in order to report on just where those dollars are truly going to be more specifically spent. But even that isn't the only work that is done. I mean, it's really a year-round process of maintaining, keeping track of the dollars, federal dollars, state dollars, private dollars, you name it. And all of that stuff is reported, frankly, every month, so I'm not sure I understand it. But Bill, I mean,
I want to say something though before you do, Bill, because on the budget, I mean, you're making it sound like we don't look at this at all. We meet individually, all of the staff works on the budget and develops this incredible detailed, you know, with all the backup, and then Bill sits down with each of us individually and we go over it. So we're coming into this meeting with a full understanding of the budget, and so again, I think his presentations each meeting have been fantastic to tell us where we are and getting into deeper levels of detail than we have in the past. So I think we're presenting more, and I really appreciate that. And we are aware. We're not coming in and just checking the box on two, you know, numbers that he threw out.
But if you can recap sort of like on the calendar year and what the tempo and the milestones are.
I appreciate the opportunity to do that. Thank you both. And I also appreciate the interest in how we are spending our money. It is important to us too. So we do spend a lot of time. I want to further acknowledge, like Brian did earlier, the level of efforts of this team. This team was here until 8 o'clock last night, still putting this book together. We were here on weekends. We had exorbitant levels of effort to put together the draft of this book, which I will remind everyone is not actually due to GFOA until June. So that is not part of the budget approval process necessarily. It just contains a lot of the information for which we make available for review. We are going to say that we're ahead of schedule from where we were last year on the preparation of that document. It is in draft form, largely complete, but we still have some items that we need to tweak in that before it's ready for submittal to GFOA. So the effort to provide that information is no different than it's been in prior years, and in fact, we've accelerated it this year from last year.
All right, thank you. Do we have any other? I thought we had another person sign up. I don't want to discourage it. Yes.
Very well. Information, briefing, and policy items. We have with us this morning one of our employee guests, the Watershed Program Coordinator, Lisa Marente.
Good morning. I'm pleased to introduce you to Lisa Marente. She's been with us actually for a year and a half now. It's notable that Lisa's position is supported by our agreement with Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District and their annual support at the Watershed Stewardship Center. But I'd like to focus on Lisa's background. She comes to us from Cuyahoga Valley Environmental Education Center, where she was associate director. And prior to that, she was the director of volunteer services for the Conservancy for Cuyahoga Valley National Park, where they manage thousands of volunteers that contribute over 200,000 hours a year. And so she really was well suited to come into coordinating our watershed volunteer program and hit the ground running, and I've been really enjoying working with Lisa over the last year and a half.
Thank you, Jen. So thank you. I'm really grateful that I've been able, it's almost been 2 years actually, and I was thinking this is the third job that I applied for Cleveland Metro Parks. So it's all time, you know, it happens. So it's a good message to all those seasonals and things out there that, you know, you set your mind to it. So it's been really great for me because it brings together all of my background and things I've done in my career, but also my education in both undergrad and grad school. So I couldn't be prouder to have this job and work with all of you.
Thank you. The next is we have from Weed to Feed, Natural Resources, Zoo and Horticulture partnering together. This should be interesting. Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Always interesting.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to present this collaborative program to the Board of Park Commissioners. I'm Leanne Lomax. I'm the manager of horticulture for the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo.
And I'm Jennifer Hilmer. I'm with Park Operations Division of Natural Resources. I'm the Support Coordinator, and we're just going to let you do this like a game of tennis. Back and forth.
To our animal care staff every day. Browse is any living plant material composed of branches, herbaceous material that we have about 75 different types of plants that we collect and distribute to our animal care team. And that browse can then be used to supplement an animal's regular diet. The browse material itself does help promote health and natural behaviors in the animals, and so it's a very important aspect of what we do to contribute to the health and well-being of our animals.
The conservation missions of the zoo and Cleveland Metro Parks really overlap a lot in that we are protecting habitats for wildlife from external threats, and we're promoting healthy habitat for wildlife. There are some differences. In the invasive plant program, we remove plants.
Yes, and then we can take those same invasive plants and use them as browse for the animals. So as you can see, we like to think that we waste nothing, and we take every opportunity that we can to use materials from within the zoo and within a number of reservations that are nearby. Certainly want to take the opportunity to thank the park managers and staffs at some of our nearby reservations, such as the Ohio and Erie Canal, Brookside, Rocky River, Garfield, and forgetting one.
Lakefront.
And the lakefront. So we're traveling every day to go and collect this material and bring it back, and without their support, we could not be successful.
That counts for about how much of the total browse?
Well, we're collecting browse daily. We probably are distributing at least a truckload a day, if not more. So the resources of the zoo are somewhat limited because we only have 188 acres, so sure. Being able to partner with these different reservations.
But I'm saying within the park system itself, how much of the browse is
100%.
100%.
Yes.
Yes.
So it can't be a natural resources presentation without some kind of dry chart. So this is not the complete list, but some of the approved browse species are represented by native and non-native plants within the park district, and the overlap of that list is fairly small, but it does encompass some significant players in the work that we do. And this is a completely non-realistic but not proportional diagram, that there are some grouse species that can be used for restoration, native species, and some that we spent a lot of time trying to get out of the park.
So this is just a short list of a few. Like I said, there are over 75 different species of plants that we can use as browse. These are some of the most popular for our animal collection. As we look at these, we see a number of different things that are invasive that can be used. I think one of the most important things to point out is that we very carefully select this plant material. The health of the animals is of the utmost concern. And so when we are out collecting it, the communication between our different departments is critical that those plants have not been sprayed with any pesticides or could be hazardous in any way.
I'll give you a couple of examples, as promised. Multiflora rose is well known to a lot of people. It's an invasive shrub. It's very difficult to cut and haul away. It has very
they
long...
They look like they're having fun.
Oh, yes. Clearly they are. It's very long, flexible, very prickly stems, and they snag your clothing and they scratch your skin. But despite this discomfort, our invasive plant crews actually get a lot of satisfaction from wrestling these large shrubs because it's a primary preferred grouse feed for the black rhinos. And we think that's just a really satisfying way to deal with a very difficult shrub. Another one of these species is European alder, which is a very fast-growing tree. It's very fast-growing, it's invasive. We've taken a lot from Hinckley, from Rising Valley. And at Big Creek Reservation, here the natural resource staff are restoring the margins of Lake Isaac by cutting and then hauling and loading into the park truck. This shipment, I believe, was destined for the elephants. So as we do this, we're very attentive to best management practices when we are removing species for browse, because we know that only after we have cut and hauled and removed that browse material will we go and apply herbicide to the freshly cut stumps. That is one way to prevent contamination. Another very important part of this, which brings together the zoo horticulture staff and the natural resources staff, is to have good plant identification skills. So in this way, we are able to do our jobs and not disrupt our process of work while contributing to the browse program.
Just a question, I mean, do we see a net reduction over time of invasive species in this program?
We do. I know that you are working on identifying locations and from where we could go and harvest ourselves, so there's a great collaboration there.
We're hoping to over-harvest our invasive species.
Yes.
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 That's the goal.
We're hoping to have some unsustainable harvest of these plants.
So some of the benefits to date are that there's no extra cost to this program, and it does not disrupt workflow. We worked on a wonderful system where sometimes our natural resources staff can deliver browse to us, but we can also send out our team to go and pick that browse up. It also gives us an opportunity to increase the quantity and variety of browse. We have different options then for daily collection. Actually, I have somebody delivering browse to us tomorrow from Natural Resources. We're looking forward to that. It's a great high staff satisfaction to know that your team is able to go out in those horrible multiflora roses, which are not easy to cut, are then coming back to the zoo for such a wonderful animal enrichment program. And it's also just been great to be able to partner with our colleagues in Natural Resources.
Yes, very much so. So the partnership has a lot to look forward to. So there are some species that are of great importance to the browse program, and I've highlighted a few of the favorites here. But they're not high priority for us to remove. However, we can target their locations to the zoo horticulture staff so that they can go and collect them. So we're actually getting more invasive plant removal than we expected. Some of our future collaborations then, we can include using our geospatial database that for the invasive plant management program to set aside populations for the zoo browse program. For example, the blue is difficult to see, I'm sorry, but we have, these are the locations that we know of some of our invasive raspberries, sweet flag, and running bamboo. We have one population that we know of. And we can set these aside for collection, and they can be held in check by cutting and removing. It takes a bit more coordination for us to remove trees like European alder from our parks, but we can steadily remove these populations while we're supplementing the diet for the zoo animals. And then we have some like multiflora rose and our Asian honeysuckles, which are abundant and widespread. And so for those, our strategy has to be more nuanced so that we can ensure that we are accurately focusing the removal for the zoo and the removal for us to our best advantage. And we can protect woodlines by harvesting invasive shrubs for zoo browse, and then using our restoration capabilities and our new greenhouse and other restoration abilities to replant with shrubs that can be used for browse in the future and to maybe put in cutting beds in some locations.
So we've been very fortunate over the last year and a half to be able to work together and to be able to create this supportive network between us. I imagine that as we move forward that these opportunities will only continue to grow. So we're very much looking forward to that.
It's kind of a pun, isn't it?
It is. But we don't want the invasives to grow. Like Jen said, we'd like to over-harvest those. So. Yes, many benefits to this, most important being that we're seeing this attraction of those invasive species in the parks to the benefit of our animals here at the zoo.
Super.
Yes.
Just a year and a half partnership to sort of like plan this and work together?
Well, in the sense that you've been here.
I've been here
for about
just
a year and a half.
Just about
and so,
2 years.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there have been sites where the zoo will come out, but we're paying closer attention and we're realizing,
you
know, we should really do this. And so we get to blend this idea that we, you know, we're a zoo with attached parks for its support, or we're a park district with the zoo embedded, you know, in it. It's nice to have those options. So that's what we have.
Thank you both.
Thank you very much. The next information item we have is the 2017 real estate report, and as Stephanie's handing those out, it's really interesting to note that 90% of the acquisitions, actually technically all of them, were not lakefront related, number one. Number two, I find it really interesting that, you know, as we closed out the largest land transaction, bringing the lakefront on board with the $14 million from the state government, there sure was a focus on the lakefront because it needed it and the community demanded it from Metro Parks. Now you look at how we're allocating the funds moving forward and making sure that we're taking care of roads, roads, and infrastructure, you'll certainly see that coming forward in the budget. Having said that, this year is really about highlighting the conservation of land, which is one of our core pillars, core tenets of how 1545 was actually created. And this, we deem, the year of the partnership coming out of our centennial year. How did we get here? So without further ado, I'd like to turn it over to Stephanie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Commissioners. Good morning. Today I'll be reporting on the 2017 real estate report. This report summarizes all the acquisitions that we acquired in 2017, as well as summarizing where we are today, how many acres we have in each reservation, each community, that type of thing. And as Brian mentioned, we really thought this year would be an interesting year to highlight partnerships. 2017 was our centennial year, and we had a big year with partnerships in 2017, but it also helped us recognize how important those partners have been over the years and how we couldn't really be here without the help of our conservation partners. So the report goes into a quick conservation at a glance. This is just a one pager that helps you identify what we acquired in 2017, you know, how many acres, how much money we spent, what natural resources we protected, and what connections we made. Also, we'll get into a closer look of each property, why those properties were selected, why we thought they were important for acquisition, and then the data behind those numbers. So conservation by the numbers highlights our acreage by reservation, by community, county, watershed, and then again, highlighting those partnerships and how we were able to accomplish those acquisitions. So this map details the properties that we did acquire in 2017, and you know, it's always interesting as we get these on map at the end of the year, we really do work throughout the entire park district. You can see we acquired land from the west to the south to the east, and our central parks as well. So it's always nice at the end of the year to see, you know, really touched on all areas of the park. We acquired 2 acres in Big Creek Reservation around the Lake Isaac area, and another additional 2 acres in Mill Stream Run Reservation. It's an upland forest on the east branch of the Rock River. A larger property down in Brexel Reservation, which preserved a large forest, which was pictured on that opening slide. And then more of our urban parks, West Creek Reservation, continuing the connections down in the southern portion of the reservation and connections along the Cleveland Plantation, Centennial Trail, and the lakefront. We had a 2 acquisitions in Bedford Reservation that totaled 22 acres, and 2 more acquisitions up here in the east, a small 1 acre property to help buffer Acacia Reservation, and another 5 acres there in the upper 40 area of North Chagrin. So as I mentioned, just moving through the park district, all of these acquisitions helped to bring our total acreage for Cleveland Metro Rocks to 23,379 acres. This was accomplished through 10 separate transactions and totaled 171 acres for the year. Those acres were distributed throughout 8 communities and 8 reservations. And the nice part is we were awarded over $2.6 million in grant funds that helped us conserve 124 acres. So, you know, a big thank you to our Natural Resources Department and our grants team that really helps get these properties. I mean, we acquired $2.9 million in real estate, but of that $2.6 million was funded with grants. So we, as an organization, only committed less than $250,000 towards $2.9 million in real estate. So big thank you to the teams that have helped bring those properties together. And, you know, we really strategically look at these properties. Why do we want to acquire them? Is this the best fit? And they all preserve and protect and make connections, all of different things. So we protected over 19 acres of wetlands, 147 acres of forest that's hidden under there, but it's headwater streams and some rivers and creeks, as well as connections. So, you know, in the West Creek area, this is going to be a future connection, future trail connections, as well as along the Cleveland Foundation Centennial Trail, expanding upon some of those connections that we've already made. So in addition to the land that we've purchased, we also work with our partners who have donated quite a bit of property. So this year, we had 38 acres donated to Cleveland Metro Parks, and those properties were valued at over $1.5 million. So if you take the land that was purchased at $2.9 million and combine it with the land that was donated at $1.5 million, our total land value that we acquired in 2017 was over $4.4 million. So we only put in less than $250,000, 5% of our funds, to acquire over $4.4 million in real estate. And again, we really just attribute that to our partnerships and the hard work of our staff.
That's fantastic.
Thank you. And I think this is one of the more exciting projects to talk about. We're going to go through each acquisition just a little bit, highlighting. I know we've seen them as they come through the board throughout the year, but it's kind of nice to look back at what we've acquired. So this is the Palmieri property. It is in Brexel Reservation in the city of Brexel, and it is our largest acquisition of the year. You know, we talk about acres and we say, oh, this is 102 acres, but what does that mean to you? Huntington Reservation is 103 acres. So this is just 1 acre shy of Huntington Reservation. So while it may look small, you know, to the big chunk of Brexel Reservation, it's really an important property. It had 20 species of trees identified on the property. It's a forested property with wetlands and meadows. It protected over 14 acres of wetlands, headwater streams, so just a really nice property. And it's a good story to tell. Western Reserve Land Conservancy initiated the conversations with this landowner, and in the process of evaluating it, they had the property appraised. The property appraised at $5.5 million. Western Reserve Land Conservancy was able to get the property under contract for $2.5 million. So what this did was it created a $3 million bargain sale. That $3 million was then able to be used as match to go after additional grant funding. So Western Reserve Land Conservancy and Cleveland Metro Parks put in an application to the Clean Ohio Conservation Fund, and we were awarded $1.7 million for that property. So $1.7 million, we have to get to the $2.5 million to be able to make that contract work. So then we applied to the Land and Water Conservation Fund and got another $300,000. So now we have $470,000 gap to cover. The Conservation Fund was administering the grant, the Ohio Forested Habitat Fund. And so we were able to close that gap of that $470,000. So in reality, we got a $5.5 million property with no money other than grants.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, so this is a good story to tell. A lot of different grant sources as well as partnerships. So. This is a smaller acquisition, but no less important, a 2-acre piece in Millstream Run Reservation. This property came to us through a tax foreclosure sale, and we were able to acquire that. You can see, you know, it's kind of a hole here, just south of the Ohio Turnpike. It's near the Millstream Run Management Center. It's really just an upland forest. It overlooks the east branch of the Rocky River. And this property was actually brought to us by the Cuyahoga County Land Bank, and that's another organization that we're continuing to work with to help us identify properties that can become available and, you know, eventually preserved when they're either in an area that we have an interest or adjacent to Cleveland Metro Parks. These next two properties are some of my favorites, and they are really protecting some of our important water resources. This is the Peterson property, which is in the North Sugarman Reservation, what we call the Upper 40 area. So you can see, you know, this is this little piece here. It would have been, you know, quite a little hole there in the reservation. This property came up for sale. It was a 10-acre property, but it had a house on it and oil and gas well that we really were not interested in acquiring. So through a lot split and a consolidation and working through the owner and the realtor, we were able to split the rear 5 acres and protect this property. And as you can see, the views from this property are just beautiful. It protects the Beecher's Brook, which flows to the Sugarman River. Just a really nice hemlock forest. This area is known to be just an ecologically sensitive area. So just so happy that we can protect it and fill that hole there in the reservation. Another important water resource is the Hemlock Creek Valley. So we acquired the Graham's property, this narrow sliver here, in 2016, and then we worked to acquire the next 22 acres through two landowners here in 2017. This is another property that was fully funded by the Clean Ohio Conservation Fund. Again, the property is appraised for more than we got them under contract for, so those matching funds were able to cover the match required for the grant. So this is a very nice part of Hemlock Creek that connects to the Tinker's Creek. So a really good acquisition. You know, you can see it's got some really pretty waterfalls, some steep ravines, just a really nice property. And in evaluating it as well, we found some pretty rare plant species that are unique to not only Cleveland Metro Parks, but the region as well. So some of our acquisitions provide just nice buffers to our reservation. Here in Big Creek Reservation is the Boyer property. This is a 2-acre acquisition just south of Lake Isaac, and it runs along, this is Baldwin Creek here. So just a continued protection of Baldwin Creek and the tributaries that run through that property. Again, primarily a wooded property with some wetlands and streams. And then in this second slide here, we have Acacia Reservation. The Conservation Fund approached us and was willing to donate a 0.9-acre property. Now, as you can see, this is a nice buffer. We've got the Northern Pond here. And so this little piece here is right here. So imagine if that was developed. And that just gives us access to the northern portion of Acacia Reservation and just creating a nice buffer there to the pond. And obviously, you know, one of our initiatives is connecting people to the parks. And that's what these next two properties really do. So in West Creek Reservation, we work with West Creek Conservancy as well as the City of Parma, and they donated 37 acres, which is primarily right here, but there were also some important pieces to get out to streets up here as well. So this acquisition connected the reservation down to west to Pleasant Valley Road and Broadview. So just really, you know, we've worked with West Creek over the years. The reservation was established in 2006, and we amended it, the lease, in 2009 and again in 2016. So this is the third time we've amended this lease to just continually add to the reservation. I mean, you can see the density of the communities here that are now going to be connected and part of the future West Creek Greenway. And this is, you know, you've got Rivergate Park down here and the Cleveland Foundation Centennial Trail. So this was another leasehold that was donated, and just a small, you know, 0.2 acre piece, but a very important piece as it just creates more access to this important trail. So this is the data behind the numbers. As you can see, we acquired new property in 8 reservations. I think the most notable being Brexel Reservation. That Paul Murray acquisition took Brexel Reservation up over 4,000 acres. So it's the first time we've had a reservation of that size. So kind of something to be excited about there. And again, the 8 different communities that we acquired property in that span across the county. And all of our acres this year was acquired in Cuyahoga County. But as we know, you know, water doesn't follow municipal boundaries, it follows watersheds, so we also like to provide our acreage by watershed. You can see that Rocky River Reservation is the biggest land holding we have in that watershed. So we own 9,700 acres in the Rocky River watershed, followed by the Cuyahoga River watershed and the Chagrin River watershed. But we also own property in the Black River, Lake Erie Trips, and Eagle Creek as well. And there's more details in these tables and reports if you would like to take a look at them. So getting to the conservation partners, we kind of highlighted a lot of those partnerships for 2017, but we want to look back over the years and say, you know, who have we worked with and how instrumental they have been. And West Creek Conservancy is one that comes to mind, them along with the city of Parma. West Creek Reservation was created in 2006 at 279 acres. Since that time, the reservation has grown by nearly 100 acres. We're at 375 acres today. So really looking at that partnership, I mean, West Creek Conservancy continually goes out to acquire properties and then makes them part of West Creek Reservation. Those properties in total have had a value of over $6.5 million since the reservation was established. So a really great partnership creating West Creek and then just continuing to improve upon it. We also worked with West Creek Conservancy in 2017 on the preservation of Parmadale. This is a 78-acre campus pictured here. In its time, it was an orphanage, but now we're really looking to repurpose this property to serve the community in a different way. So this property, West Creek Conservancy got under contract for $1.75 million, and we contributed $250,000 towards that in 2017. We're not recording this acre yet because West Creek is taking the lead on restoring this property, and at that time then it'll come over to Blue Lodge Parks. Western Reserve Land Conservancy has been a big partner not only this year but over many years. Just since 2013, we've worked on 2 projects with them. There was a property in South Chagrin, the bird insurance property, that's pictured here, that they helped preserve, as well as the Palmer property this year. So those 2 properties combined have helped to conserve 132 acres, which included 17 acres of wetlands and 7,400 linear feet of headwater streams. But again, these partnerships are important because they help us leverage funds. So those 2 projects alone use Clean Ohio Conservation Fund, WRSP funds, the Land and Water Conservation Fund, and the Conservation Fund to help conserve those 2 properties. So the Conservation Fund, as I just mentioned, has helped in a number of properties. Our relationship with them started when they donated the sizable Acacia Reservation, 155 acres valued at $14.5 million. So a very sizable donation, as well as they, this year, just donated an additional 0.9 acres to help buffer that northern pond. But they not only have donated land, they're also helping to administer grant funds. And like I mentioned, they contributed that $474,000 towards the Palmieri property. So you can see a lot of times these projects overlap between different agencies and different funding sources. Land Studio has also been an important partner over the last several years. They have donated 3.8 acres of land to us, and this has primarily been for the construction of the Cleveland Foundation Centennial Trail. So while these are small strategic pieces, they're valued very high. These acquisitions came in a value of over $2.5 million. And the Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District has always been an important partner. We go after WRSP funds, but you need a local sponsor. And the Regional Sewer District has always been our local sponsor on WRSP projects. So through those projects, we have preserved 8 properties since 2010, and those total over 280 acres and are valued at $2.75 million. And we'd be remiss not to mention the City of Cleveland, a big partner over the years. Just since 2000, we've been able to create two new reservations in Cleveland Mountain Parks with their help, Washington Reservation and the Lakefront Reservation. We've also added additional acreage to Brookside, Brocksville, Garfield Park. The two most notable acquisitions in the city of Cleveland, obviously being the Seneca Golf Course as well as the Lakefront. Those two acquisitions combined have increased the acreage of our park by nearly 1,000 acres. They've also been an invaluable partner in creating access and connections along the Cuyahoga River, such as Rivergate Park, Towpath Trail, and the Cleveland Foundation Centennial Trail. So the state of Ohio is also an important partner because they provide numerous amounts of support to us in the means of funding these acquisitions. And this is accomplished through a variety of sources. It could be Cleveland Ohio Conservation Funds, it could be WRSP, it could be NatureWorks. So this is just a quick summary of what they have helped us accomplish over the last 7 years, so since 2010. We have been awarded over $9 million in grant funds from the state, which has helped us acquire over 600 acres of land. And these are just some highlights. This is the Rosine property that was protected with state funding. That's another one that we use five different funding sources, including Hinckley Township easement, providing some funding to help acquire. And just some additional properties in the Heron River area, the Faldetta TCB property, which is in Bedford Reservation. Timberland Farms was an 80-acre acquisition in Mill Stream Run. The Jack Holding Company property was in South Chagrin. The Jackson property, which was a 16 acres in South Chagrin. And then lastly, the Palmer property, which we acquired today, this year. So, you know, it's interesting because our partnerships don't just stop at the acquisition. We have a lot of partners that help us take these newly acquired properties and turn them into something more, whether it's a trail connection or recreational nodes. And so over the years, there's been the Connecting Cleveland Partnership, and this was established to help focus our organization, the Trust for Public Land, Land Studio, and Cleveland Metro Parks, on connecting communities, parks, greenways, providing access to the water. And so this has been an important partnership. It's helped to acquire Rivergate Park, and it's also, again, leveraged funding. This Connecting Cleveland Partnership helped to leverage funding from the Wendy Park Foundation, the George Dunn Foundation, and the Cleveland Foundation. So again, working with our partners to seek more funds. NOAACA, or the Northeast Ohio Area Wide Coordinating Agency, has been another implementation partner and was instrumental in helping us acquire the Tiger Grant, which helped fund the trails that are pictured here. So lastly, this is just a quick summary of all the partnerships that we've had since 2000 and how they've really focused our acquisition efforts and made it possible for us to acquire what we have. And to be honest, this is a conservative number. You know, for Western Reserve Land Conservancy, we use the purchase price, not the appraised price. So $96 million in land since 2000 with the assistance of partners and over 2,000 acres. So, you know, I mean, just to recap, we're grateful. We're grateful to the landowners that work with us and are willing to sit on properties for 2 years while we look for funding. You know, we're grateful to our supporters, like the state of Ohio, that provides us the funds, and our partnerships and community members that, you know, really help make it happen.
That's a great story.
I just wanted to say that I think that Stephanie's report is direct evidence of the board's and Brian's commitment to advancing the conservation mission and the tenets in the revised code with protecting the watersheds and the green space. I mean, we couldn't have more facts to support how important it is to this organization and the time we spend and the money we spend, and not only some of our money, but how we go out, and since we're a good steward of our finances and we bring in these other dollars, and thanks to Kristen Trolio and all for work with the grants and our natural resources team. But I also want to thank in a large part our real estate division, Kyle Baker, who is has been an instrumental part of this work. We've brought this legal work in-house, and we, you know, much to the dismay of our outside counsel, but we wouldn't be able to produce and protect this much acreage if we weren't working at this pace. And the board and Brian didn't approve adding additional counsel to our staff. So Kyle is just all in on all the real estate, and so you see it when Stephanie, I think it's clear, her work and growth over these years and Isaac Smith too. So thank you to the team. We also, you know, Mr. Gallagher was here talking about his project. We hold very dearly these deed restrictions that our founder put in place. And so that's why, at your direction, we are very diligent and have been working over a year with this entity to try to you know, figure out these solutions. But the deed restrictions are so important to our mission, so we continue to work with diligence on having fidelity to those restrictions that are in place. So thank you once again to that real estate team who's just doing phenomenal work.
Well, well-deserved recognition. I guess I only want to add is, to me, what's also just so a great story to tell is that we're not in this alone. I mean, this really is such a collaborative effort. This isn't competition. This is collegial. And look how, it's almost like the way banks can make money grow, because we're making our whole community grow together and to create these partnerships, to be able to maybe stand at the van is one thing, but to be able to have so many different players in working for a common cause, with all the other dysfunction of government, this is government at its best, and you're all to be commended, and I think we are grateful for the fact that we can create these kinds of relationships, because it only benefits the larger community in the long run. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the work and the diligence. And again, just echoing, when we came up with the concept in our 100-year annual report for our land, it was very important to highlight the partners across all agencies. And it's really remarkable what this park district has been able to achieve to grow to over 23,000 acres. Without further ado, let's get to the visitation report and find out about the people that are visiting these wonderful parks that we help conserve, which is part of the recreation mission and part of the education mission of bringing people into the park and tying this together.
Good morning. Thank you for having me again. Annual installment.
May not be on.
Give it the shine.
Yeah.
It's definitely just used it.
That's fine.
Your job security.
But some people will do it.
I'm on and not working. I even came early for the lesson.
Stephanie, is you sabotaging?
So just a recap on how we classify visitors. So we have an overall number, which is visitor occasions, which is the giant number of 48 million. But that includes anybody who drives into a reservation, whether they're driving through to go to work. And then the recreation visits are anybody who, the estimate that we have of anybody who stops for a recreation visit. So we estimate that by using counters that we have in around 120 different parking lots at our reservations. And then the commuter scenic driving is the difference. So we have that big number of anybody who's crossing into our property, then the recreation visit, people who are stopping. And then we also have an adjustment where we estimate the number of people who arrive by foot or bike. So our recreation visits for this year are 18.5 million roughly. So that's up a bit from last year. So you can see this is just our three-year trend here. So our recreation visits are up by about 700,000. So in order to increase the accuracy of our visitation estimate, every year we're looking at specific reservations and trying to make sure that the parking lots that we're counting are the ones with the most traffic, and then also figuring out how many people go in those as opposed to the ones that we don't have counters on, so we can estimate weights. And then we also have observations that occur at different reservations where we have part-timers who sit and count the number of cars coming in and the number of people per car, so that we can have those adjustments as well. So just to highlight some of the changes that we saw, the area is experiencing increases in recreation visits. So West Creek, we saw an increase of 31% in recreation visits. And part of that was due to an increase in volunteerism. It was very strong last year. And also the Watershed Stewardship Center use was up. And when looking into that to see why, there was an increase in no-charge workshops and meetings and trainings. And not surprisingly, Edgewater saw a big increase last year. We had 20% increase in visitation there. So we had the opening of the beach house. We had record Edgewater Live attendance. And the fireworks centennial celebration and other things like the eclipse, you know, just brought some people there who, you know, may not have visited otherwise. So we estimated the fireworks attendance at about 30,000 and the Edgewater Live attendance over the course of the summer to be about 122, which was up from, well, actually, it's on the next slide. So Rocky River also was up 11%. So it was the first full year for the Fort Hill Stairs, and there were also a number of events that were hosted to celebrate the centennial. And then we also had, just the way that it's been reported in visitation, is Rivergate rolls up into Washington. So Washington had a 17% overall growth, so looking into why that was, the water taxi had an increase of 54%, and there was a corporate sponsor on that, so this past year all ridership was free, so it makes sense why that would go up. And then Merwin's had an increase of about 64%. So part of that was there was a number of regattas and 5Ks and bands that were added there, so there was a lot of increased visitation there. And then on the bottom, the zoo saw a 2% increase. And usually, you know, when we have new exhibits, it makes sense that we see increases. So this year it was pretty exciting to see an increase when we didn't have any big exhibit openings, but we did have the reintroduction of Zookies, and we also did have the birth of a number of cute little animals to help us increase visitation. So increases in specific program or facility visits. So Rocky River Nature Center saw an increase of 55%. And part of that is due to partnerships, partnership programs like the Youth Outdoors and Fatheads. Also similar to just the overall increase at Rocky River is the Fort Hill Stairs, and then an increase in event attendance that they hosted. North Chagrin Nature Center saw an increase of 11%, and part of that can be attributed to the owl aviary opening. And then they also hosted a number of new events this year. Eco Explorers, while it's a smaller program, it saw a big increase, 28%. They hosted more educator workshops, and also were doing a lot to just get the word out about their program. So they hosted staff two tables at two different educator events. Then Youth Outdoors, 16% increase. So they did more outings with the City of Cleveland Rec Centers, and they had activities led by Youth Outdoors at the Cuyahoga County Fair and at Girl Scout Day. Then Outdoor Recreation saw an increase of 21%. They increased their number of programs, increased program attendance, and then one thing in particular was at the lakes they started a sailing program, so they added a whole sailing progression. And then, as I mentioned before, Edgewater Live, about 45%. Part of that beach house opening, another part that really helps out is ideal weather. There were no rain out days, where even though Thursdays were great this summer, unfortunately, it seemed like poor Euclid. You know, every Friday, not every Friday, but they didn't have the benefit of such great weather, so. And then areas for decline and potential factors. So Manikiki was down 11% in starts. There was inclement weather early in the season, so, you know, they were closed, I believe, 19 days in March, where the previous year they were only closed four. They saw significant rainfall year over year. So that's always, you know, a big factor with golf. Nature Tracks was down 9%. So some of the challenges there were there's some vehicle issues where they're making some repairs, and they also lost a full-time naturalist mid-year, but they're very confident that those numbers will be going up next year. And then Ohio and Erie Canal saw a decrease of 10%. So, you know, this is us trying to figure out why some of these numbers may have fluctuated. So part of this, one reason we think that it may have decreased is that there's increased access to the towpath, and it may have decreased the need for people to actually park and go to Ohio and Erie Canal.
So is there any good way to measure that?
Unfortunately, with this, I'm trying to figure out that and also a decrease at Big Creek. So there's some areas where we think people were accessing the park via a certain parking lot, and now they're not. And in the instance of Big Creek, it's an area that's not our property, the parking lot where we think they're accessing from. So I'm trying to work out ways to estimate that, whether it's, you know, trying to have our visitation staff sit for certain intervals and try to count to estimate how many people are accessing different ways. But right now we don't have a specific answer for that.
Right now.
Yeah. So Brooksville Nature Center was down 9% in their program and roving numbers. So part of that was Fall Fest attendance was down by 2,000. And also they had the construction projects there, like for the Brooksville Education Building. And then Big Creek, as I mentioned, down 7%. So part of that, you know, there was flooding early in the year. But then also, as I mentioned, trying to figure out where we may be losing counts of visitors. So it was the Carmel Heights Connector Trail that we think people are accessing the trail, but not necessarily crossing our path. So that's why we may not be counting them. So we're going to be working on how to make sure they're included next year.
Questions?
Just as a highlight again, I think, you know, to highlight the work that Metro Park did in its centennial year across all reservations is really, you know, some of the legacy projects that were highlighted across the work. You know, think of the work that William Syndrome did, the founder, that particular area hadn't seen an investment in a number of years, and we were able to bring and pave the parking lot and redo all of the stonework with our own masons and kind of re-look at that area. We also looked at A.B. Williams Woods legacy area, you know, with our new trail connection, looking out over there. We talk about Brecksville Legacy Reservation with the new nature education facility coming on board. We also did investment in Garfield Park. So, you know, I think, you know, when you look at the totality of how the system is set up and the clear expanse of 23,000 acres, we continually to work around. So when you look at an investment of $14 million with the lakefront and partners there, but then you look at almost all of the land acquisitions, I would argue all of them, because Riverview is actually in Washington's reservation, not the lakefront. They all weren't centered around the lakefront. So to show that we are looking at investment in all communities, this year, the investment in Maple Heights in the community that we had not invested in before, again, another partnership with the city and the community development Black Ranch to help bring that park on board. We further conversations with other communities, so we continue to look at how we affect, how we take care of, and our budget and our documents all dictate and show that very well.
Well, I appreciate that, and I think I speak for each one of us. I mean, we're very, very conscious of spreading the wealth and making sure it goes all around the totality of our park system. I mean, I think that's something that's always in front of us. So to get these reports is just, it's great affirmation of really the whole effort that we all put forth to make it work, and it's very gratifying.
We do have an executive session. Just to highlight, our next regularly scheduled meeting is April 19th, the third Thursday, and we do have an executive session.
Is there a motion to go into executive session for the purposes of discussing real estate acquisition and purchase and litigation that appears imminent?
So seconded. Roll call.
Bruce Winker?
Aye.
Debbie Berry?
Yes.
Okay, that does it. We'll take no further voting, no further business. You're welcome to stick around.